DS106 Radio. Or no, now it's DS106 Radio. I had my audio down. I warned my next guest that it wouldn't be seamless. And I think she believed me because I think she knows me. My next guest, and I didn't announce this guest yet, so it's a surprise. So I guess, can we break the surprise? Let me ask this guest before I reveal who she is. Have you ever had experience with DS106 Radio before, mystery guest? That's a question.
For me?
For you, absolutely. And I'm testing your levels while you do it.
Good. Okay, yeah, let me know if there are any problems with hearing me. I have had a little bit of experience with DS106 in the past, but this is my first time airing live on DS106 Radio.
Huh. So have you ever, so you've never gone live on DS106 Radio?
No, I mean, I've been an avid listener in the past, and even more so now, with everything going on. It's a nice distraction, but no, I've never hosted my own show.
Now, you, if I'm correct, you did take DS106, the class.
I did, and yeah.
What version of the class did you take? Because there's different flavors and varieties.
Gosh, it was actually one with you, and I know that we did, we watched The Wire, so maybe it was Wire 106?
It was Wire 106, exactly. Yeah. And so, do you want to hear a funny story about, well, I'm going to have to reveal your identity here soon, but did you make a radio show for Wire 106?
I remember working with Audacity and a few, I guess, audio tools, and we sort of cut up, I guess, episodes of The Wire and made them into our own shows. But so it had a more visual, I guess, look at things versus, you know, just being on the radio with the audio stuff. Yeah.
That's cool. So here's a funny. So this is, I'm joined today by the great Lauren Brumfield, who's Reclaim Hosting's own and who's been owning all elements of Reclaim Hosting since 5 or 6 years ago. How many years is it, Lauren?
2015. So I think I'm hitting year 5 in June officially.
That is crazy, isn't it?
Nuts, yeah.
In a good way for us.
No, definitely. I was reading a old blog post from, you know, 2014 or 15 where, no, I guess it was 2015 where, you know, I was just talking about bringing on new tools and things. And I guess we can talk about that more in a bit, but just, yeah, it's a lot of growth at Reclaim. It's all good.
Yeah, it's awesome. So here's my funny story. And then I think it's funny, you may not, but... It's Reclaim related, which is why I'm telling it, and also DS106 related. So another person who works with us, you know, there's a few, Meredith Fierro, who's the customer support manager, was also in Wire 106. Did you know that?
Yeah, that was actually how we met. She was, I can't remember if she was a freshman or a sophomore, and I was a junior or a senior, and that was the first time that we met. We were in that class together, but I think we sat across the room from each other. We, you know, didn't really know. And then it wasn't until she was brought on at Reclaim that we kind of made the connection. Oh, we were in that same class together. That's so crazy. It was crazy.
So her parents came to, Reclaim Video, so which was the little video store we had when we had the office, which we still have, but no one's in it because we're in the lockdown. And I met her mom and dad, and they were in the store, and I think they really, like, you know, because they were kind of my era, and so they really dug on the whole idea of recreating a VHS store, and it was fun. And I remember the dad, who's a tugboat captain, was like, or who's a captain of a boat, was like, you know, and I remember she had this one professor who was just having her his students watched The Wire, and I was like, what the hell am I paying for having my daughter go to a university and watch The Wire? I was like,
explaining to you about you.
It was awesome. And so, like, Meredith, you could see Meredith go beet red and then like, Dad, that's, you know, that's this guy. Like, and it was awesome for me because I would have been the same way if I was a dad, you know, paying what one has to pay for a university now, hearing that my kid's watching The Wire, right? And that's what they're doing for their quote unquote class. But it was such a surreal moment of like, you know, I really have been living in a DS 106 bubble for too long.
That's amazing. I didn't realize, I mean, I knew that they came to visit, but I don't think I heard that story.
Yeah, so and he was like, you know, and she was taking this one class with this guy and he had him watching The Wire the whole time. Because I was talking to him about Baltimore, because if you're a captain and you work on the boats, Baltimore was a major port at a while, and most of it's now down is in like Virginia Beach area. But I mean, I knew I had friends and close. Actually, my nephew is in the Merchant Marine right now. But even a good friend, family friend growing up went into the Merchant Marine. So I knew a little bit about that field. So I was happy to talk to him. And it was just funny that that came up. And I don't remember exactly how. But I was just hysterical laughing because I was the culprit.
Yeah. DS-106, I had a lot of love-hate. A love-hate relationship with that class.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was a ton of work. And I remember, you know, feeling that at the time as a student, but now looking back on it, I mean, it's given me everything I have ultimately, because that's how you and I first connected too. You know, and then I went on to, I guess, work for you that summer as a student aid worker, and, you know, now here I am at Reclaim. So,
although the history is a little longer there, because you took DS-106 after the internet course with Paul Bond, right?
Right. Yeah, I took that with you and Paul Bond, and that's true. That is how I guess we first connected, and then from there, that's what, you know, led me to take DS-106, because I was like, "Huh, this Jim Groom character is kind of interesting. Let's see."
And then you regretted that for the next 6 years, 8 years.
And now here we are.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things too worth noting, and I think it's, I like that you brought it up, is that DS-106 is kind of like, at least the folks online are like, oh, DS-106, you know, it's this thing. But I think for students at UMW, it was kind of more of a cross to bear, you know? Like,
it was such an interesting course though. It was, at the end of the day, it was super refreshing just because I was an English major. So I was reading tons of books and writing tons of papers. And this was completely not that. So I was able to get out of my element and be creative and learn new tools and honestly have the freedom to explore, which is just really refreshing compared to all of my other courses, which gave me my to-do list for the next 13 weeks, you know. And so having these units where you could just sort of explore, I mean, there was obviously this understanding that you had to produce things, so you couldn't really fake it. Like you could fake reading a book if you needed to, but
we've never done that though.
No, never. Never as an English major. But the course was great. I learned a ton, like I said, but, you know, and I have a lot to show for it. I still think I have my class blog archived somewhere. But yeah.
I think when you were trashing it, though, I think that was more interesting radio, frankly. Like the fact that it was too much work.
That was the other thing. And there wasn't a very clear way of grading. And so it was like, okay, I'm not sure if I'm doing this right or wrong. And I think by the end, you know, you just kind of realize there is no wrong or right way. It's just the act of being creative is the goal. And the act of learning these new tools and feeling empowered to go do so that's ultimately what I came out of the course with. And so it was good, but I think it took me the entire semester to get out of this mindset of I need someone to grade my work.
Yeah.
And I never got that. So it was, it was, you know, you kind of make it what you want.
You know how like sometimes students don't read the book? Sometimes right. professor don't read the blog post. I mean, I'm just going to come here and be honest.
Well, no, I mean, by the end, you kind of figure that it's like, there's no way that he can sit there and read all those posts. He just kind of sees that it's there.
I think there were like 13, I want to guess, but I think there was something like 1300 or 1500 posts from that course alone. I think there's been over like 80 some thousand, like, and you're right. And you really did. I mean, I don't have a philosophy, never did around DS-106 other than like, you know, do something, like build something. Right. But like the point you make is a good one. It's like there was no real grading happening. Like we kind of pretended to grade and the students kind of pretended to care about the grade. But at the end of the day, by week 6 or 7, if you were still around, because a lot of people jumped off, you were in, you know what I mean? Yeah. You're just trying to deal with it and keep up with the work on a weekly basis, you know? And it was brutal, I have to say. I mean, it gets a lot of love, but it was a brutal course for the students on the ground. And usually by week 10 or 11, there was some burnout in the course itself.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's why I had the love hate with the stuff around the wire. Like, you know, I remember telling my parents, you know, I'm watching the show for class, and they ended up watching it on their own and loving it. So like there are people that were willingly watching the show, and I knew that that meant that it was good, but I kind of missed out on that because I was treating it like classwork. And, you know, when you've got a ton of coursework to do, you're being asked to sit down and watch a couple hours of TV. It's like, I don't feel like I can do this. And so for me, it was definitely a good exercise of just, I think, time management, but also thinking of new ways to work and think and be productive and feel successful. So
if I remember you right, and I think that's why Tim and I ultimately, like, we are definitely hiring Lauren as our first employee, is as with everything you do, everything was on time, everything was fairly perfect, everything was like, and the fact that you would worry about it, given, you know the way you produce and the way you attention to detail in all elements of your work, and that's followed through in Reclaim for sure. It's funny that you would be worried, of all people. You never missed a post. Everything was on time. Everything was clearly communicated. There was never a question.
Well, it's those damn timestamps with everything online. It's like there is no faking it. It's either you published by the deadline or you didn't. And so you just got to get it in.
Yeah. It's cool. And I think, oh, yeah, you know, DS-106 would be a fun class in this kind of moment. And I think to myself, actually, no, it would be a nightmare for students. They would run the other way, you know?
Again, it's a good distraction. And I think that that's maybe probably my segue into the work with Reclaim. It's like, I'm really thankful Reclaim for a lot of reasons. Primarily right now is just my mental health, you know, being able to jump into work every day and have a lot of things to tackle and also have freedom to kind of take it where I want a little bit, has been great. And I think the same is true for DS-106. So,
yeah, well, you have been doing some amazing things. And I think one of the stories, and we have many to tell, and I think you and I have kind of agreed that we want to do this more regularly, share stories, talk around Reclaim, but even beyond Reclaim to other stuff. But one of the things is your kind of early introduction of a tool, like as soon as you started almost, that has now become like an instrumental part of our infrastructure, which it must be cool to see. And I don't know if you want to tell that story, but I think it's a cool one.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess it was shortly after being hired. You know, I realized early on that I needed to kind of organize the lives of Tim and Jim via Reclaim hosting. A lot of, I guess, company documents and things were just sort of on sticky notes in files.
I mean, we weren't organized? I'm finding it hard to believe.
Oh gosh, it drove me crazy. And so there was a lot of physical paper, just piles and scraps of paper that had ideas on them that needed to be, one, digitized. And so there was that piece. But then actually, you know, the history of our customers and our accounts, you know, the story arc of where they came from and how they came to us and why they were with us and what their concerns were and their pain points and all of that, that was just nowhere to be found except in your all's heads, which was great, but it's not scalable and it's not, you know, sustainable in the long term. And so the idea was to take all of these spreadsheets and things that you all had and immediately implement this tool called Asana, which is essentially an open source public to-do list. Is it open source? I mean, there's a free version.
Open source, but I don't know. Yeah. I have to check. I think it's a paid application, but
yeah, it's a paid application. That's right. But there is a free version that we actually still use. There's a lot of value to it even without paying for it. And, I started out first by converting it kind of into our CRM, our customer relationship management tool, where we could essentially track the stories of our schools. And so I was taking everything out of spreadsheets, and I actually have a post on that from, you know, 2015, 2016, where I just talk about pulling everything out of the spreadsheets because there's no way to update things in spreadsheets in a clean way. There's no way to track progress. There's no way to really search things cleanly or cross-reference. Now we're getting really nerdy here with my organizational requirements, but so Asana was kind of my way forward with that, and that worked for a while. But again, Asana is meant to be a to-do list, not a CRM. And so we did kind of grow out of that quickly, you know, and I have,
And we went to like Sugar CRM. Is that what it was?
That was kind of the older version of the app, but it was called Sweet CRM. And I remember feeling really proud at the time that I learned how to install it manually in cPanel and then obviously move everything over to this new tool. And it was great at the time. It was free. It was what we needed. But that was still very big and bulky. And so now I'm kind of getting into more of our CRM talk. We've now moved on to Zendesk Sell, and I need to write a few more blog posts on that. But in terms of Asana, I really loved watching that kind of grow and transform and morph over the years. Now we're using Asana more to truly regulate and monitor to-do lists within our internal, I guess, workflows. So there's an entire infrastructure project where Chris and Tim primarily are tracking the work that they're doing and their to-do lists, you know, and it pairs really nicely with support in that if we get a ticket that comes in that requires work from infrastructure, we can link back to that ticket in infrastructure and tag them and set due dates and things and know that the work is going to happen. And so we're kind of pulling it out of tickets, which was really important because things get lost super easily in support tickets.
And in Slack, we found, we use Slack, that's our kind of main office, like you said, and a lot gets lost there.
Yeah, so it became really important, I think, to not only determine what each tool was going to be used for, but then to communicate that internally with everyone, that everyone has a very clear understanding of how things are being used so it can work well together. Asana is also where we've, you know, Chris has done some really cool scripting to, you know, allow them to track disk limitations. So disk usage for servers. So if a server is running out of disk space, those notifications are coming into Asana as tasks that someone needs to deal with. You know, and here recently, You know, we're trying to standardize our servers across the board. There's a lot of legacy schools that, you know, have gotten different servers over the years. And so just trying to standardize some of that and keeping track of those long-term big projects with lots of steps, Asana has been instrumental for that and just absolutely crucial. And so I think now that we're actually using it as a to-do list and a public to-do list that we can delegate to different employees based on the types of tasks, now we are really seeing the true potential of it. And it's just proving to be invaluable.
And I agree 100%. And I have to say, you've done a really amazing job of keeping us our eye on that ball. And let me give you an example. So when we started creating, so it's an interesting question. And it kind of, it parallels two pieces. One is when we first started setting up Domain of One's Own servers for schools, it was, and you can attest to this, Lauren, because you've done it. It was a 2 or 3 day job just to get the server and the software like configured. Am I right?
Oh yeah. I mean, definitely multiple hours, at least, you know, if you were really on top of your game, it might take a little more than half a day to really get. And that was assuming that all DNS and everything was pointed from the schools and that there was, you know, nothing extra. But yeah, it took forever.
Took forever. And that got easier. I would say the half a day reality became when you said, you know what, we're going to move all the steps for creating a server for a Domain of One's Own school into Asana. Right.
That's checklists. Right. Because that's the other thing you have to think about. Okay. When you're setting up a server, you're not just creating a droplet in DigitalOcean. You have to install the software on it and get the tool licenses activated and, you know, connect it with our payment portals. And there's all of these different steps and, I guess, setting configurations that have to be set once the tools are installed. And it's so many moving parts, and it's really easy to forget a step, even if you've been doing it over and over again. And so, you know, I guess
like hacking the theme and doing all the work in WordPress and then WHMCS and then WHM. It is a lot. Yeah.
And so we were actually telling schools in the beginning, I remember saying, and we still kind of hold this timeline true, but we usually beat it. You know, we say, okay, it's going to take us about 2 weeks to set up the server. From the point at which we have a purchase order in place, give us 2 weeks, we'll set things up. And that was literally just because there was so much work. And then afterwards, you had to go back and double check everything. Because you don't want to deliver the server and then not having checked that people can't sign up for an account or that kind of thing. So a lot of work went into it and there were a lot of steps. And so being able to put those details in Asana as a template. So what is the perfect server setup look like and what are all of those steps? And so every time we had a new school come in saying, I want Domain of One's Own out of the box. Okay, well, we would clone that project template for a server setup, you know, give it the name of the new school, state university, and then delegate specific tasks. And so the delegation was also a really helpful piece because beforehand, you know, there's really no sense of who has done what work. And so as a result, we weren't being productive with our time because people were overworking and working on top of each other. And you know, you can communicate in Slack, hey, I'm going to do this part, you do that part. And that works when you're a 2 or 3 person company, but not so much when you're a 7 person company and everyone's working in a different time zone and has different hours and things get missed in Slack channels. So having a consistent, space to track the project progress, Asana, again, I cannot speak highly or higher about it. It's been great.
I agree. And you really, you broke that down well, because when we started building the templates, the whole idea of assigning particular tasks, like this is going to be for us because we're dealing with the customer directly. This is going to be for Tim who's dealing with infrastructure. This is something support needs to know about. Like we were able to, as we naturally fused from all three of us, when we started, did everything to, you know, this group holds this group does this, etc. We could grow seamlessly. Not that we're super big, but we could still grow seamlessly and communicate, right? I mean, that's what Asana let us do. It let us communicate, which, like, we couldn't in Slack effectively anymore around this kind of stuff.
And I think that's kind of been the biggest goal for me personally, and with my, I guess, position, has always been, since the beginning, with the mindset of getting everything out of your all's head and somewhere that is feasible for others to take over. So, you know, if we're going to bring in a new employee, how would they set up a server? And even that simple question, you know, Jim, I'm not sure if you remember training me on setting up servers, but it involved me watching you have, you know, go through the process. And I just took notes because there was no documentation and there was no, so, you know, writing that down. And then I was referring to personal notes for a few months and then realizing, hey, that's not good either, because if we bring in someone else, they're not going to have my personal notes. So it's every mindset like that. It's just having to get out of that and say everything needs to be public to an extent, obviously, even if it's just internally public, and, you know, it needs to be squared away and approved by everyone setting it up, and everyone needs to follow these steps. And so it's like, even for you two, Tim and Jim yourself, it's, you know, you all know how to set up servers, but even you all have to follow those steps too. So each server is consistent across the board.
Absolutely.
So Asana, it's been great for that.
And it's interesting. I mean, a testament to that, and I hadn't thought about it till we started talking right now, is like Asana is also an interesting archaeology of the way we've been able to, you know, script out the installation of a server, you know, all pieces of it, you know, the DigitalOcean droplet, the WHMCS setup, the WordPress setup. Like, we brought on Chris Blankenship, who works with Tim directly on infrastructure, is what we call it. And, you know, he's been moving through that template in Asana for server setups and scripting it all. And
so, just to kind of, I guess, jump forward to where we are now, you know, a couple years ago,
a year ago.
You know, servers were literally taking, we would say, okay, we need about 2 weeks to do this, knowing internally that it was going to take us about a week to set up the server. And then we would set another week aside for the single sign-on piece with working with, you know, the school. Whereas now, you know, I will say, okay, Chris, we've got a new school. We're ready to set up this server. You know, here's the project name. Here's the URL. Here's the school campus IP addresses, giving him everything he needs to go forward. And average, he comes back to me about half an hour later saying it's done. So
it's amazing.
The first time he did that, it's like my jaw dropped. It's phenomenal, but it's almost on the other side of things now where I'm like, dude, I'm not even ready for you yet. Like, I haven't even written the email back to the customer. What are you doing? So
I think there was a day, and it was kind of mind blowing, but there was a day where like 3 or 4 managed hosting servers were set up in a day.
And like that was, I guess, what, a couple weeks ago even, where, you know, kind of as everything was happening with the quarantine stuff, it was like 3 different servers got set up in a row, and it was like, all right, well, I've got my work cut out for me now, because I used to kind of, I guess, be able to spread out the trainings a little more, because once the server's done, it's, you know, it's my job again to step up and take over and kind of walk the customer through the server. And so now that Chris has moved so fast with some of this, it's like, okay, well, I got to rethink my time a little bit. And I guess the time that we're telling customers that this is going to take, it's no longer 2 weeks. So I'm, you know, just trying to think through those expectations a little bit.
It's kind of a good problem to have, I guess.
Oh.
I mean, it's amazing to me, like you said, in the last year, how quickly, you know, Chris has come on, has been working with Tim, and has shored up our ability to script out a lot of that, not to mention Meredith taking over support. And really, like, I feel like, you know, and I say this, I blog about this, you know, I tell anybody in my family who will listen at any given point in the day, but I really feel like we are, as a team, as an organization, whatever you want to call it, I think of it more as a team, like, we are really hitting a sweet spot in terms of a maturity and a group that can just function at a high level given the demands on a 7-person group, right? It's cool.
Absolutely. And I think that's always the goal, right? Is just to be able to be a well-oiled machine. And we were that for so long as a team of 3, 4, you know, even 5. And so it's like, okay, as you continue to grow, there's always that feeling of how do we make sure that everything is communicated properly, that there's this expectation that things are going to work this way, like here are the proper workflows. And so I think in the last couple of years, that's kind of where my mindset has shifted with my position, as just sort of overseeing some of those internal organizational, I guess, workflows, is okay, now that these are in place, now that Asana is cooking, it's the way that it needs to be, how are we going to create the proper pathways for people to communicate back and forth and to raise concerns and to talk about things that aren't working right, you know, and to set the expectation that things aren't always perfect and that's okay too. And everybody has an opinion. And so how do we allow that conversation to be facilitated in, I guess, in productive ways? And so you know, having channels for each, I guess I call them units of Reclaim, right? You've got this accounts sort of sales unit, though I hate the word sales, but that's just kind of what it is in its core. We've got support, right? And then we've got infrastructure. And so just allowing those three units to be able to communicate really openly and have these regular open dialogues is super important. And if one, I guess, conversation chain breaks, then everyone else suffers as a result. And so it's just really important to always be looking for ways to improve and tighten that up. And I think you're right. I think we found a really good sweet spot right now, just between Asana and the balance between that and Zendesk support and the balance with Slack and just setting regular meetings, but not too many meetings. You know, I think it's good right now.
I agree. And I think, you know, radio ultimately is therapy, right? And so I think as part of any therapy, one of the things to work through, and Shannon Hauser is saying this, she's listening. So hi, Shannon.
Hi, Shannon.
One of the things she's noting is she's glad that you're there to keep it organized, right? And also the ever-growing documentation. And I do think another thing that's crucial, and it's something I don't want to say you struggle with, because there's very few things at Reclaim you struggle with, but one of the things that you have been intentional about and often thinking about is, you know, how does your role as director of operations function, right? Because it's almost a meta role. It's a role that's always thinking about something that I know for example, I'm terrible at. I don't think about. I just do what I want to do, and I don't think about like the wake it leaves. And I do think that you really, and I think part of the tightness of the group, right, the fact that Meredith is killing it on support, that Chris is killing it on infrastructure, that you're killing it in sales and accounting and the management of all this, has a lot to do with building those frameworks of communication and that idea that, you know, we move pretty fast. We don't get too locked in to any one structure, but there is a structure that we're working within. You know, it's not like we're just, you know, hey, everything goes, you know, it's just time to do something new today. And I think part of that is the role of the director of operations. And, you know, you have killed that. Like, you have done a really good job of kind of defining what could be a very nebulous thing. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if we're talking about personal not struggles, but just something that I've paid attention to. It has been finding that balance between, okay, how much, you know, organization or reevaluating is actually needed. And I think that, and you've probably seen that a little bit from me too. It's like, yes, Asana was good, but I've also offered tools that have not been successful. You know, and so I think finding that balance between, okay, what is the goal? What, where are the pain points? And do we need to just slap another tool on it and call it a day? Or is this, you know, a symptom of a larger issue? And so that's a lesson that I've learned in the past, and over the last couple of years. And I do feel, you know, kind of like I'm on the other hump or on the other side of that. And I have more of a foresight now to be able to say, okay, no, this was just a one-time issue. We don't need to, you know, let all the sirens blare and rethink our whole process. You know, it's just, let's just fix this one problem and call it a day. Or, you know, is it something that happens regularly that, okay, this tool is no longer working, or this workflow is no longer working, and for reasons X, Y, Z, and let's talk about that and figure out a plan forward. I also really like that Reclaim doesn't have to take months and months to come up with solutions. You know, I get really frustrated sometimes when things are kind of left in this, oh, well, let's think about that and come back to it. And that's left there for weeks and months and months, and nothing ever gets done as a result. And so I'm really proud that Reclaim can diagnose a problem, fix it, and push out a solution fairly quickly. And so, again, just finding workflows and methods to allow, to facilitate that and to allow that to happen comfortably, is I think really important. I feel good about that too.
I think that's a good point. And I think the broader point you make about like being responsive, but also not, and I really liked what you said about not trying to overthink, you know, let's say for example, an outlying issue. Like one time, one server had an issue because of one thing, you know, and we have 150 servers and we obsess over that one thing that went wrong on that one server for a 15-minute period. And I think sometimes it's like, okay, let's identify what it was, but does that mean all other 149 servers have to be reworked now?
You can always learn from your mistakes, right? If something goes wrong, it's like, okay, that's on our radar now. We know it. And if, you know, a server went down, for instance, and everyone online didn't know how to fix it, okay, that for me is indicative of the fact that we need to set up a professional development time and, you know, at least learn how to fix it as a group, yeah. Right? That's something that happens. But if, you know, one person makes a mistake, or if, you know, a ticket went wrong or something like that, it's like, okay, let's learn from this, but let's move on. You know, it's okay. And I think that's where I've had to do a lot of personal growing, that one issue is not the end of the world, but it's also worth noting and being aware of and saying, okay, let's just keep this in the back of our heads. And if it happens again, or if this becomes consistent, then here's our plan that we're going to take. And being communicative about that is really important too. So if that is my mindset, it's important to communicate that so others know that that's on my radar and it's not, you know, just swept to the side. I think that's been half the battle too, is just communication is so important.
Yeah. And it's funny because you've been here, you know, for, I mean, a long time, you know, and Meredith too. And it's funny that we talk about this a lot. It's not something you can always identify, but we talked a lot about the culture, right? Like every workplace, every group has to understand their culture, has to have a mindset of it, and then also has to feed it, right? And I think that's what we're talking about. Like the broader thing is you've done a really good job of understanding, of feeding that culture, like the intentional learning, right? We're returning to the fact that everybody at Reclaim not because everyone's expected at Reclaim to learn this, but like we have real curiosity and needs that come as a part of our work on a daily basis that all of us have to address on our feet, issues that we probably didn't see before. And yeah. like that means that we all have to be thinking about this together communally, but intentionally, which is a
absolutely. And I, again, it's just anytime you can kind of facilitate learning and growth, that's always a good thing, right? But it's just, it's doing it in ways that are healthy. I think, you know, and a great example of this is, I think in the beginning, especially a couple of years ago, support was kind of, was, and I guess it's still the lifeline of Reclaim. You know, it's how we keep tabs on our customers. It's how we keep tabs on potential issues with our infrastructure. Like there's a lot of learning internally and externally that happens in support. And so if we get a ticket that leads to a larger issue that we need to resolve, I think in the past there's been this, okay, everybody's freaking out. We need to solve this immediately. And just kind of, again, the sirens are blaring, right? Or, and so it's been really important to say, okay, great. We're not going to learn and teach ourselves in this moment at the, you know, while the customer is waiting for us. Let's fix it, move on, and set up a time where we can learn about it or say, and that's just simply because the technology is always changing. And so it's like you may feel really solid on a subject, DNS, for example, or email, or even just cPanel features, but then cPanel puts out a new update and suddenly those features are different. And so it's not, you know, indicative that the employee, myself or anyone else, is failing by any means, or, you know, is not, doesn't have enough memorized. It's just simply the fact that, okay, we need to regularly be learning because that's just what we need to be doing. We can't be getting complacent. And so I think putting these intentional learning units in place, you know, while they're still very new, I'm already seeing a lot of really cool work that's coming from it, and not just the tangible, you know, learning that is then applied to support tickets, but also the fact that people are now feeling a little more confident to blog about the work that they're doing or talk about the work. You know, at the point that you know it enough to be writing documentation articles and solving issues, you know, that's a personal self-esteem thing too, you know? And so feeling like your job is rewarding in that way, and like you can teach someone else, that's a good practice to have. So I love that the intentional learning units allow for that work to happen during work hours, but then you know, we've started setting up these monthly meetings that kind of bookend one unit and start the next unit. And the idea is that, you know, someone new is going to run that meeting each week, or I guess finish up one unit and someone else will start the new unit. So great example, you know, what was last or February's unit? It was WordPress. Or you started WordPress, but Meredith did one before that. I forget what that unit was.
Migrations.
Yeah. So Meredith was talking about migrations. She was able to kind of wrap that up. And then Jim, you introduced WordPress to the group. And it's not from a place of, okay, let's talk about what WordPress is. It's let's talk about those, you know, oddball scenarios. And it's like, okay, if you want to map a domain on a multi-site sub-site, how do you do that? Exactly. It's just, you know, these weird one-off tickets that we get, it's like those are where we're spending our time now. And so that's really cool to see. And then having these meetings, you know, I'm hopeful that Gordon or Chris or Katie or, you know, someone else will want to take over and run that meeting in the future. And that gets me really excited.
Can I air some of my grievances with Tim on the radio? Is that a problem for you?
Sure.
Okay, great. Pregnant pause. This will be funny, hopefully. Not serious. But so I handed off WordPress, right? I came. I wasn't really prepared. I just always expect that, you know, I'll say something. You showed up late.
Sorry.
Didn't prepare. No, that's all right. I deserve it. Didn't prepare anything. Just talked for 15 minutes at everybody. And then everyone's like, okay, are you done yet? And you're just going to give me the like, okay. And then Tim comes.
Yeah, because Gordon starts talking about music. That's like, right. Wasn't even about WordPress.
We're talking about Depeche Mode doing a vinyl cast on DS106 Radio. No one had any patience for us. So that's how you don't do it. But still, this is my grievance. I was building culture, which no one understood. Right. But then Tim comes on with his presentation for April. And it's like
slides
and everything. There's been like 6 tests done to make sure like this was what the audience wanted to. They showed this slide before. Like, it was awesome.
He sent the slides over after the presentation too, right? And check in.
And I really felt like, you know, this is what I didn't want, to be exposed for the sham that I am by these intentional learning workshops. So I'm kind of pissed at him.
Well, I mean, it's just two different approaches. You took the stance of, okay, go forth and learn. And that was what you did in DS106. That's what you've done as my boss. You know, that's just kind of your MO. And I think Tim, in some ways, you know, takes the more like logistical approach of, here are the things you legitimately need to know in order to answer, you know, a ticket or to do X, Y, or Z. And so with WordPress, everyone really, you know, at Reclaim knows how to install WordPress. They're familiar with the WordPress dashboard. They get the quick troubleshooting fixes and things like that. And so a slides presentation wouldn't have necessarily been helpful in your instance, but with the migrations, which we're revisiting that because I think there was a lot to cover. And, you know, having Tim take that on was really great because, you know, those slides were awesome. They were able to say, okay, here are the types of migrations that you'll come across. Here are the things that you need to be aware of for each migration. And here are the tips and tricks that you need to know when responding to customers.
Don't you think it was a little too good though? Like,
no.
I'm not getting what I'm asking. I'm not getting the desired response. This is what I'm talking about.
No, it should make you feel like you need to step up.
Yeah, I know. You all do. Hello. That's what I don't like about any of you. That's my biggest problem right now with Reclaim in general. I'm sitting here and I bared all on the radio before. Like, so I missed a meeting during this. I luckily was able to reschedule it, but because I've been on the radio for what is now almost 3.5 hours.
So am I going to have to fix that mistake? Luckily.
No, it was more internal, so I was able to fix that. But I think things could go the wrong way for Reclaim. Not that it will show or anyone will miss me, but if I get sucked into DS106 Radio, right, the culture is going to go down the drain, right? I mean, who are you going to have there to talk to you about Black Celebration?
I have just spent the last hour talking about how I have set up proper pathways for people to talk.
No, we've spent this last hour, and I think it's lost on no one on Twitter why you're ruling Reclaim and why certain unknown people, unnamed people like myself are not, so...
Not the only time. Obviously, you're extremely valuable at Reclaim. We don't need to explain why that is. But when you kind of disappear for, you know, on the radio for a couple of hours, I think, you know, there are moments where I'm like, wait, did he talk to that person? Did he not talk to that person? You know, again, it's just getting things out of your head and into a place where I can know the work that you've done. That's a work in progress.
No, but it's all kidding aside, and I think Meredith demonstrates this too with the work she did at OER 20 to talk through like the scaling of support And we have a lot more to talk to you and talk about you and I between Zendesk on the radio, obviously, about Zendesk, the work you've done there. And just, I think it might be useful to talk a bit about culture building and some of the things that we want to be more intentional about, whether it's some of the intentional learning stuff, you know, some of our aspirations, you know, what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how we're going about it. I like that kind of stuff. Like a talk like this between us is awesome, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot, you know, we could talk about the tools all day long, and not saying that I don't want to. I think Zendesk Sell, Slack, you know, there's a couple other ones that, you know, the documentation that we're kind of revisiting for Domain of One's Own. There's a lot of, I guess, topics that I would love to cover on DS106 Radio, but I think culture is also huge and the main reason why we can be successful. It's like if you can set up all the proper pathways and workflows and get it down on paper the way that it needs to be, but if you know, if your team isn't happy, if you know, there's not outlets and channels for problems to be discussed or for people to feel like they can reach out and ask questions, you know, even just empowering folks to be able to say, you can ask questions and not feel silly. You will not be judged. Like that kind of mindset is incredibly huge, because support is, you know, it's got a magnifying glass on it. Every ticket comes in through Slack. Every time you answer a ticket, other people can see that. And so you have to feel confident about your answers, and you have to feel confident in asking questions. And so being able to set up dynamics where people feel comfortable to do that is half the battle, if not most of the battle. And so, you know, and then just being able to say, okay, we realize things are tough right now, you know, let's just hang out for an hour. You know, I think you and Tim have done a great job in kind of alleviating that stress and worry that we are supposed to perform like normal right now, because things aren't normal right now. And so, the fact that you all came in right away and said, if you need anything, let us know. If you need to take time, let us know. We understand things are not great at the moment. They're not functioning like normal. And so being able to say that right off the bat and having that come from the very top of Reclaim allows us then as the employees to feel okay knowing that we're not okay, if that makes sense.
No, it does. I mean, it's funny. The story there is I was trying to keep it together for about 2 weeks before everybody in the U.S., because things were kind of getting crazy here. And as you know, Tim was really focused on, you know, the brass tacks of the arcade for the last few months. And I was like working with you and Meredith more directly on Reclaim hosting. And like, you know, we do a good job of always trying to balance workloads. And I think I was sitting here looking like, what the hell's going on? And everybody in the rest of the world, pretty much, save China, was like, what the hell's going on with this COVID virus, those crazy Italians, you know? And then it's funny, because when it started to go other places and hit, I was a little bit more like, I know what everybody's in for. And it's kind of weird. Right. Like, it's not tragic, luckily, in the traditional sense, but it really bends your mind about what's important, what's not, and all that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I think, you know, and we've talked about this in our personal meetings and, you know, as a team and stuff. It's just, this is an invisible thing, right? You can't blame one person. You don't know where it is. It's invisible. And so as a result, it's kind of like you're in this state of overreacting and underreacting all the time. You know, we're in a state of emergency, but yet we're working from home and I'm in my pajamas and, you know, it's like, I don't know how to be some days. And as a, you know, I think everyone copes with that differently. You've got introverts versus extroverts, you know, it's just, it's so, you know, it's just, I think we have to give each other grace during this time and know that some days you're going to bury yourself in work and you're going to feel really productive. And then some days you'll get writer's block and you won't be able to concentrate on anything. And again, just, you know, regular check-ins with folks, asking what people need, and just sometimes even asking, that's all you need to do. So yeah, I hope that our Reclaim team feels good, and is in a good space to feel like they can take time if they need it. But then also know that we're here to just kind of goof around and hang out, and, or if you want to be productive, like, okay, there's plenty of work to do. So, yeah, it's the balance.
And you said it beautifully. I mean, this idea of grace, right? I mean, we do have to provide each other, you know, that space and that grace. And here's something I'll throw at you. One of the things that you and I struggled with early on in our positions at Reclaim was we were remote while, you know, the office, for a while you were at the office, but then you went remote. I was pretty much always remote. And
right.
The challenge early on, for sure, but even now, for when you've been working in the office and you have the kind of deficient definition, like, I'm at work, I'm not at work, you can separate that from your home. But even knowing, like, because I'm working remotely, do I have to always demonstrate I'm working, right? Like, that's a struggle. And I think folks who are going remote now, whether it's at Reclaim or anywhere, part of that struggle with getting used to it is, how do you demonstrate work in a way that's not just, you know, like, signaling I'm working versus, you know, being able to feel comfortable doing what you do, stepping out, like, having a day that makes sense to you in terms of a rhythm. It's not always working, because people, I've been accused, and I don't know why, of wondering why people aren't always working like me. It's not true. It's pure heresy. But I do think that that's a real struggle, right? Like, it's a broader struggle when you're working remotely. But imagine being pushed into working remotely now and not being used to it. That's hard.
Yeah. It's, and again, I think my, you know, when I first went remote, I think most of my struggles were internal, because I wanted to make sure I had this just massive fear that even though I was working my ass off every day, that was going to go, you know, that wasn't going to be seen. And as a result, it wasn't, you know, I was going to get backlash for that or whatever, because it's like, okay, if you're not answering a support ticket, it's like, well, what are you doing? But, and that was also, I think, a struggle with stepping back from support a bit and moving into more of management.
That was a cultural problem at Reclaim. Right. I do think we had a cultural problem with support tickets early on.
And I think that we've done a lot of work to fix that, and we have fixed that, but there's still some, you know, really deep habits ingrained within me to just, you know, want to make that known, like, yes, the work is happening, I promise, you know, that kind of thing. But it's so part of it is a personal battle that I really have to talk myself through. But also, you know, just going remote can be tough, and it's important to have balance, to know, like, okay, when you're in the office, you're standing up more, you're talking to coworkers, you're grabbing coffee, you're doing, you know, there's more interaction and more downtime. You know, and I feel that every time I come to Fredericksburg and hang out in the office, I'm not near as productive than when I am at home, because I don't have any distractions. And so it's actually the opposite for me, that I have to realize, you know, okay, I've been sitting at my computer not looking up for the last 3 hours. That's unhealthy. I need to stand up. I need to walk around. You know, I need to take a moment and breathe, because I don't have coworkers to look over and ask me questions or thing, you know, or no pinball machines in my office.
Totally, you know? Yeah.
So finding that balance is important. And then in terms of if you feel like you're struggling on the opposite end, you know, folks are moving to a remote space now and they're having to communicate their work in different ways. It's just about communication and saying, this is what I'm doing. If you need anything else, let me know. And feeling confident in your employees, or I guess your coworkers' responses, and not overthinking them. So that's just kind of the approach we've taken. It's if someone needs something, they're going to reach out. And I check in every now and then, and I just have to be confident that if someone has an issue with my work or has questions about it, they're going to ask questions, and I feel confident that I could back up the work that I'm doing. So,
yeah, and that's the trust too. I mean, there's a, right. I mean, it works a lot of ways, and that's why a culture that's premised on, you know, Tim and I have been intentional from the beginning, and I think it's part of, you know, the long history of many people at DTLT at UMW that we're out of. Like, there was micromanagement was not something we felt was ever productive to the work we did. We just found that it was counterproductive. And at the point we started getting micromanaged, we all turned off. Like, we all were like, nope, sorry, that's not how we're going to operate. So we just don't.
And the other thing I'll mention too is I think working remotely has made me much more observant around others, and with the work that's happening at Reclaim, you have to be observant, right? Because if you're in person and you're working with someone, you can see their demeanor, you can see, you can hear their huffs. If they're frustrated, you have more senses to be able to determine a scenario or an issue, right? But when you're remote, you literally only have the text in front of you, and it's really easy to overthink, they put an exclamation point there or a period there. That must mean they're happy or sad. And, you know, it's really important to just kind of scale back and but also say, okay, you know, is there an issue here? Is there not an issue here? You know, just I think only having Slack and the tools that we put in place has made those senses much more heightened as a result, because it's totally all you have.
Yeah, I agree. And a lot gets lost, and you can overthink things that the other person didn't imagine at all. It's some of the limits of text, as much as I love it, right? Like, you don't get the full sensibility of whether someone's frustrated, whether someone, because if you were to like go off of exclamation points in the way I write, you would think I'm either always happy or always mad or always something, like, because that's all I use. Right. Like, I'm not consistent, and that's true to some degree in real life. But at the same point, it would be very hard to read someone based on a back and forth in there. And we've come up with different ways. But I think we still have work to do probably there, I would argue.
Well, and also I think, you know, another value of being remote is it's trained me to be more respectful of everyone's time, and knowing that if I ask a question in Slack DMs, for instance, I might not get an immediate response, and that's okay. And that means that I need to adjust my expectations. It's, you know, if I walk across the room in an office, I know that I'm going to take someone out of the work that they're doing when I ask a question. And so it's, you almost like, I know that when we're even in the office, sometimes, you know, Jim, if you're doing something, I don't walk up to you. I put a message in Slack still, because now it's archived there. There's a history there. But I know, okay, now he's going to prioritize this as he needs to, not as I need it to be answered. And the same is true for Tim or anyone else. Even if we are in person, I'm now in the habit of still asking my questions in Slack, knowing that they're going to get to it on their timeline, not my timeline. And so I think it has made me more respectful, you know, and maybe that is a little embarrassing to admit, but, you know, I know that people are going to get to it when they get to it, and that's okay too.
Yeah, that's a brilliant observation. And I don't know who started it, but I think definitely wasn't me, that's for sure. The whole idea of the status to let people know, like, I'm blogging right now, or you know what, I'm reading, or I'm researching something, or I'm doing that intentional learning, or I'm at the beach and I don't want to be bothered. Like, whatever that status
when is huge. Was on vacation, Jamaica boy, you know, stuff crazy like that. But again, it's just, it's another way to feel connected. I do appreciate the Slack statuses because it's another way to communicate the work that you're doing when it's not, you know, producing something right away. It's okay. You know, sometimes my work is just really there. I mean, there is no timestamp attached to it. It's going through and checking in with accounts or making sure that things are organized or, you know, updating this and that. And that doesn't always have a blog post publication date on it or a support ticket, you know, sent. So it's, I think being able to say, you know, right now I'm doing professional development or I am reading about X, Y, and Z, or, you know, whatever it may be, when other people put up statuses, I feel more connected to them because then I'm able to say, you know, have you thought about this? Or, you know, I'm able to interact with that more. Right now, my status is actually DS106 radio. And I think, you know, I think Meredith is now listening to the radio, maybe because she saw that status. I don't know. It's just, I think it's, yeah, anytime that you can communicate more, I don't think that's a bad thing.
No.
Truly.
There is, I mean, there's that limit. I love the DS106 radio status. And by the way, if you're listening, you are listening to DS106 radio. And I'm joined with Lauren Brumfield, who's been an absolutely staggeringly good guest, talking all sorts of wisdom and truth to power about reclaim and beyond. But I do. I really like your point that you make about not only like communicating through different mechanisms, right? Because the visual status and the you know, the emoji or, you know, the GIF culture that we have, like there's a lot of places to have fun, but also communicating all the time. You know, is crucial. I mean, I don't think we've ever had an extended conversation thinking so much about a lot of this, but I appreciate the opportunity, frankly. It's
absolutely
nice.
I think it's always good to check in and again evaluate and just you're right, it's kind of like therapy, right? And I think everyone can benefit from therapy, truly. You know, just to be able to talk things out. And again, we are in a remote space. And so I'm never using my voice. I'm always typing. And so being able to just talk about things without a true agenda, I think is important. And going back to the GIF culture quickly, it's, you know, if there's one more thing that I've learned or that being remote has taught me, it's just to be a little more expressive in who I am. Probably most in the water cooler channel, which is kind of our virtual water cooler, right? It's where we can just kind of talk about non-reclaim things. We share funny articles or a lot of GIFs and stuff. And so just, you know, I think yesterday I put in the water cooler that through 4:30 p.m. I thought all day was Friday yesterday.
That's right. And
it was really unfortunate that it wasn't Friday. And so, you know, then Katie put in there, she said, Lauren, that was a 9-word horror story. I'm so sorry. And Tim put in a GIF from Les Mis saying one day more, you know, and it was just, it was funny. And it was, okay, was it needed? Do people need to know that? No, but they did. And now they know a little more about me, especially as we're bringing in new employees, you know, finding new ways to connect and to learn about each other. And especially when I'm not in the office every day, you know, saying, okay, this is who I am. This is my personality. This is what I was thinking at that moment. Even that, which seems so insignificant and has nothing to do with productivity at Reclaim, again, it creates that culture and a space to say, this is me being imperfect or this is me not knowing what's up. And I think it allows other people to feel more comfortable in what they're thinking. So that's probably, I guess, my final, you know, here's what I learned from being remote tip of the day.
That's a good one, though. I mean, I think you were dropping all sorts of knowledge on the radio today. But that's, I mean, it's worth thinking about. Like, I personally really appreciate the fact that Maren Deepwell and Martin Hawksey share so much about their remote. You know, they went remote a few years ago. And I remember early on, before they went remote, they were talking to, I was talking to them about, you know, something related to OER 17 or 18, I don't know which. And, you know, they were really thinking hard about what that would mean for their culture and their team. And, you know, in hindsight, it's such a difficult and tough move. So to imagine people being placed in that, you know, overnight and not necessarily willingly, you know, you do, that's that whole point you made about grace. Like, you have to provide some space for understanding that, you know, depending on all sorts of factors we can't even imagine, that's going to raise some real issues. So I think I lost Lauren, or she said, you know what, I'm tired of hearing you talk so much, I'm jumping out. But she was awesome. I was going to, you know, let's give her a virtual round of, hey, that was awesome, because it was great talking to her, and she probably had work to do or something because she jumped off. But that's good, because it gives me a cue. I'm at 3 hours and 43 minutes and 10 seconds of holding down DS106 radio. I've been giving up meetings for you people. I have been playing songs. A vinyl, like, let's think about it. Let's do a little recap for the last minute and a half before I get off. I'll give you a couple of minutes, and then I'll try and give a sign off to anyone who's picking up the line. We did a quick check-in with Fiber Boy, which is my son Miles. And ooh, hey Lauren, are you back? Oh, she might be back. Let me call her. Hold on, I'll call her. We'll do it on air. Boo boo. Hey Lauren.
Hey,
I said on the radio, I was like, she's probably tired of hearing me going on and on, and yeah, she just dropped out. That was good though. I'm glad, because I wanted to, I gave you the kudos that you so deserve after this conversation. I thought it was a great conversation, and I want to do it again.
It was really good. And yeah, I would love to do it again and get into some of the Zendesk Cell stuff. You know, just because I think there's, and maybe talking about standardizing servers, or, you know, even some of the domain of one's own documentation stuff we're thinking through. I think that could be fun too.
Yeah, I agree. Now, we have much to talk about. But anyway, I want to thank you formally for jumping on and making this such a stimulating hour of discussion.
Oh, yeah. I hope it was enjoyable for the listeners. And it definitely was fun. This was my first radio experience. So I'm happy to be here.
They don't matter. Let's just be clear. Like, the listeners aren't that important. It's you and me that are important. They're super important. See, that's where me and you, we were on a roll together. Everything was like that. But now we're going to go separate ways, because the listener.
It doesn't mean we're out of sync. It just means we balance each other. That's how you have to think about it.
Well, it's the truth. And everything you said previously for the last hour. So it's awesome. But I think from what I've seen on Twitter, there's been a lot of appreciation. Particularly as I'm finding with every guest I bring on, of the guest, not me.
Yeah, well, this has been fun. I need to check out Twitter now, but I hope to do it again soon.
Cool. Well, thanks, Lauren. I'll see you on the other side.
Sounds good. See ya.
Bye-bye. So that was a great Lauren Brumfield, holding down the knowledge on DS106 Radio. And it's been a good 3 hours and 45 minutes of radio. Like I said, I've given up talks that I was supposed to go to, meetings. I played music in excess's kick. Antonella gave us the lowdown on her bread, on the infractions here in Trento, all those people breaking the law. And Miles started with a discussion of his strategy. Miles is my oldest son in chess. So we covered pretty much about everything we could. I've been a radio stream hog, but I've been trying to represent the DS106 radio spirit, because it would be amiss if I didn't say that before this show, Nigel Robertson in New Zealand held down the radio with an unbelievable show for several hours. And then before that, we had, we got a connection problem, which might be me. But before that, we had a conversation I wasn't even awake for between, I think it was, Julia Forsythe, Rowan Peter, Leslie Linball was on the radio, Brian Lamb, maybe Anne-Marie Scott too. I mean, it was a full-blown like panel of, from what I could see on DS106 Radio's hashtag of love. So it's been an awesome kind of run. And it's Friday afternoon, 5:33 p.m. I'm officially giving up the stream in 5. You are listening to DS106 Radio. 4, 3, 2, and I'm going to count down to 0. 1, 0.